90% of all scientists that have ever been alive are alive today. That's a lot of information. But don't panic. It's not an exact science.
Hey, Shannon, how are you?
Doing pretty well. How about yourself?
Pretty good. I'm catching up this week because I was out of the office on Monday.
I was also out of the office on Monday. Weird that we took the same day off.
Along with over a million other people.
I thought that maybe we would not fall into the trap of talking about the celestial event just because everyone's been talking about it. But man, it was so cool. We decided we had to talk about it.
It's true. And we haven't talked about it before this. We've actively avoided it in any conversation.
Correct.
And it was, yeah, it's obviously the eclipse. We didn't want to talk about it beforehand because, like Shannon said, everybody was talking about it beforehand. But now that it's over and we have some firsthand accounts to share with you and some things that we thought would be interesting to talk about after the fact.
Exactly. Things I didn't think about beforehand. I want to know from you and from everyone else what their experience was with traffic, because I can tell you the ridiculous hype over the cataclysmic traffic jams that were going to happen was nuts and way overblown.
So we flew, so traffic was different for us.
Air traffic, it's still a thing, John.
It was still a thing. There was, I think they said, 116% increase in flight plans or something like that.
Wow, okay.
Compared to the previous Monday. We saw pretty bad traffic on the roads below us, like crawling.
Okay.
Getting out of central Arkansas. And I also saw some pictures of Tesla drivers where all the charging stations in Arkansas were overloaded and people were waiting in line for hours and hours to get enough charge to get home.
Now that's pretty funny. I hadn't thought about that at all.
I mean, it's a great idea.
Oh, interesting.
But we don't have enough electric cars in the area right now to justify a ton of stations.
Right, exactly. So there they all waiting.
Yep.
That's awesome. That is awesome. So where did you wind up going then?
So we ended up in Russellville, Arkansas.
Did you told me off air they were planning on having like a big 4-day party or something? Is that what you found when you got on the ground with your 300 other planes?
Yeah, it was crazy. We did not go into town. We just stayed at the airport.
Okay.
But they had a lot of celebrities in town. NASA was in town doing PR and science.
Ooh, wow.
It was apparently one of the top places in the country to go see the eclipse.
Interesting. Based on
NASA said this is like one of the maximum totality places and very likely to have good weather, though we'll talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was neat. I don't think the traffic to that airport was as cataclysmic as they had expected.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had told me on the phone, we're going to start parking people at 6 a.m., be here by 10 a.m. if you want a spot.
Right.
And we had somebody land 3 minutes before totality.
Okay.
It was still very busy, and I would not have wanted to see it much busier.
How early did you get there?
I think we landed a little after 8.
Okay.
Yeah, we left here 7:30 or so.
Man, was it boring hanging out at the airport all day or no?
So that's what we thought was going to happen.
Right.
And we brought enough batteries and stuff. I had a ton of Milwaukee batteries and an inverter and a ton of USB batteries. I had my laptop. My wife had her laptop. Like, we were prepared to basically just have a work day.
Geophysics is batteries, everybody.
Geophysics is batteries. But yeah, we were prepared to, you know, just plug in our laptops and sit there in our lawn chairs with umbrellas over them and just work until eclipse time. And we ended up not.
Okay.
I will say we've both had very busy times at work, so it was kind of a welcome break. It was also just a lot of fun watching all the planes land. Because it was continuous.
It's impressive.
It was probably 2 hours of, you know, 2 mile interval arrivals.
Wow.
So it was kind of fun to watch that. We joked we were going to start a We Rate Landings Twitter page.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And it was,
that's cool.
It was really amazing to me how many big, like large corporate jets full of people taxied up to the ramp and dumped out all of some company's execs.
Wow. I guess Russellville. I wouldn't have thought that runway was that big.
It's almost 6,000 feet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a decent sized runway. But some of the planes were pushing it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that was where we went, and then they had really got into it, even at the airport. Well, one, they had it very organized. You could tell this had been planned.
Impressive.
The plan was getting executed. but they also had gotten into it, and they made everybody branded chalks for your airplane that said KRUE Eclipse 2024 and gave them to you when you parked.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome.
No, they're really cool. I've got them hanging in the garage.
That is super neat.
And wow. They were one of the airports that wasn't charging ramp fees. They had a donation jar out, but they weren't charging fees.
That was my next question, was that if you got those, then I assumed that they were charging fees too. But...
No, and
nice.
I bet, and I really sincerely hope, that they made more with a donation jar than they would have with mandatory fees.
Yeah, that is a great idea.
I donated more than I would have been willing to pay as a fee to land. I would have gone somewhere else.
Yep, that's brilliant, actually.
But yeah, that was where we went and sat there and watched. And then after the event, you could tell somebody had been waiting to do this the whole day, but the second that totality was over, one guy jumped up on his wing and was like, clear prop. and it wasn't far off from that. I mean, it was probably 90 seconds after totality ended that there was a plane starting and taxiing out.
Oh, no kidding.
we waited. We were probably some of the first, I don't know, dozen planes there, and we were in the last dozen to go. We waited for probably 2.5 hours after the event.
Oh my goodness.
Just because I looked on flight radar and yeah, I think I'd rather watch people take off and sit here and
sit in the hot plane,
eat some more pretzels. Yeah. So that's what we did. And that was fine. Again, we enjoyed watching it, enjoyed chatting with people and just kind of sitting there and relaxing for a little bit. And then about 4:30 we took off and came home.
Oh, okay. When was the last Monday that you've taken off?
I don't know. Yeah. The 90s?
Exactly. That's amazing. Well, that's really... I mean, do you think they came close to that 300 planes they had told you, or no?
No, I'm going to guess between 150 and 200, which is still a lot for that airport.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Well, that is super great.
Yeah, so that was fun. But where did you end up?
So I did wind up in Dallas. We went to a former colleague's house down there, and it was really cool. They had a little party on the lawn, which was fun. And even better, the woman's dad had brought his telescope, and they had a big, like, you know, 50-inch TV set up hooked to the telescope. And that was really awesome. And so they had that up pretty early, a bunch of cameras that were taking time lapse. And they had, you know, just, it was really funny because afterwards she said that she felt like she was picking up red Solo cups, but instead they were eclipse glasses because they were just like all over the lawn. So it was really cool just to meet a whole bunch of new people. They had their kids out of school. I took my daughter out of school, and we went down there. And so they all got to play. That was fun because a bunch of kids there. And then also I had snacks and all that jazz. And the telescope is really neat because telescopes now aren't what they used to be, right? Like, number one, didn't look like a telescope. Looked like a weird tall doorstop. And it talked, which was the coolest part of all of it. So they had this set up maybe like half an hour before the eclipse started in general. And then the eclipse started. And so it was neat because the telescope would be like, eclipse starting, and would give all these instructions. Oh, yeah. It felt like I was on a starship. That was the coolest part. It got really scary for a little while because of the weather, which we'll discuss. But we wound up seeing it, and the whole time, you know, the telescope's like, eclipse will begin, totality will begin in 30 seconds. And this countdown, I felt a little Spaceballs-ish, I'm not going to lie.
Right.
But it was super neat. And then, you know, went through the whole thing, worked out just perfectly with the weather and everything. And as soon as that was over, the traffic wasn't bad. I will say that the hotel, we stayed in like North Dallas and they lived in East Dallas. The hotel was pretty packed, but traffic wasn't really that bad. I certainly didn't notice any time before the eclipse at all. Like it was like a regular, maybe even less than normal Monday traffic in Dallas. And then coming home, because we came home on I-35, it was like 5 o'clock traffic in Dallas, essentially, even though it was at 3 o'clock. So it wasn't the worst at all. It certainly was, I felt like it was way more overblown to the point of, I thought with the forecast that maybe we wouldn't even go down, but I'm really glad we did.
Yeah. The last time that we talked, you were thinking that you were just going to stay at home and mm-hmm. be happy with partial. And I was like, oh, at least come over here to Arkansas. And then I wasn't sure what was going to happen with the weather here, and it was kind of a mess.
Yes. So we woke up on Monday, and it was raining. And I was about to say to my kid, get in the car. We're headed to Arkansas. Like, I sat there and got online to every weather, anything that I could. And I decided that, nope, I'm going to tough it out. It's fine. This is where we came. We're going to sit here because I can't imagine if I mess this up, you know, how mad I would be at myself. And I also, we did decide to go just because I had read so many things that said, you think 99.9% is awesome, but it's not. And
yeah,
they were right.
It's true. And the last eclipse, we were in Colorado. We didn't drive into Wyoming to get into totality. Mm-hmm. And I was kicking myself very heavily for weeks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's that. I remember that 2017 one was, it was a little bit further away for us to drive, so we didn't even talk about doing it. But now I have regrets about not even going in 2017. Like, we should have gone anyway. Like,
well, in another 20 years, when we're on, you know, episode mm-hmm. 1500, we can.
That's right.
We can go
that's
to
right.
Because that one's going to be even closer to me than this one.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. I immediately did was look up all the next total eclipses.
I mean, unless you're going to go to Reykjavik, it's going to be a while here.
Well, so that's the one I want to go to, I think. I was like, we can swing Reykjavik or Australia in 2028. I'll be able to swing that, right?
Yeah, there you go.
So,
mm-hmm. Patreon I thought it was members, really funny. It's time to step up.
Exactly. We'll have an eclipse tier. $1,000 a month, and by the time we get here, we'll have time to
right
time to do it. I mean, yeah, so the weather, right? This was the amount of news on this. I often think about our tagline for the show, right? When we talk about how many scientists are alive today, and there's just so much more science being pumped out, right? We did that fun paper a couple of weeks ago or a month ago. That was about how scientific papers are not making big scientific advances like they used to, and all this. And I really felt that when consuming media about this eclipse. It was just an unbelievably overwhelming amount of things. And the day of, there was even an article that came out that was like, how to protect your dog during the eclipse.
Yeah.
And I thought, is this? It was on NPR.
And there was a decent amount of, well, there was a decent amount of useless information. There was also a decent amount of false information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I also saw an article that was titled, Why You Need Eclipse Glasses. And I'm like, ooh. Feel like that one should be pretty self-evident.
Oh, no. Yeah. I certainly got a few texts from people saying, I saw this on Facebook, which was, you know, all these optometrists begging people not to let their children view the eclipse.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, I don't think so. That's nuts. That's nuts to me.
We did hear in the massive group of people that were gathered on the ramp during the eclipse, we did hear one sounded like a relatively young voice say, my eyes hurt. And oh, no.
Oh, no. I did, to the people who did send me these Facebook things and asking if I was, you know, allowing my children to view the eclipse. I did find a lot of info that said most of the time your eyes heal from that.
Right. So it's yeah. Fine.
Which was one of those myths that goes out there that you're going to go blind if you even look at it a little bit. We did have a close call. It's really scary. The people's house we were at, they had these cool, like, double 2X glasses. So they were like little binoculars, and the sun, the little sheet of protectiveness had fallen out of one of them. And oh, thank God I saw it before I used it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a close call.
Retina remover 3000 right there.
Exactly. I'm like, oh, and it's magnified. Great.
Yep.
Yeah. So that was a close call, but everything else worked out fine.
Yeah, so the weather, I very much appreciated cloud forecasting. Clear sky forecasting is very hard. Like, okay, if on a typical day, if a meteorologist says it's partly cloudy or it's mostly cloudy or it's mostly clear, we look outside once or twice and might notice, well, it's a little cloudier, maybe not quite as cloudy, or well, there's clouds, so they were right.
Mm-hmm.
Never do normal people care so much. And pilots care a lot.
Right.
But we're always disappointed a lot in the forecast for cloud, especially cloud height.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, it's a difficult thing to do. And of course, what everybody wanted to know is it going to be cloudy where I am?
Right.
And I saw multiple meteorologists post after the eclipse, like, we're so glad this is over. We're so ready to go back to forecasting the easy things like severe thunderstorms, hail, and tornadoes.
Oh, I had that Weather Service cloud forecaster up just constantly. And I think it was... I hope people took from this. I don't know if they did. But, you know, our local weather service had the cloud forecast up for, I don't know, probably since Friday. And it was a very interesting forecast graphic. And there were two little Oklahomas. And it was basically, it was a little stoplight, green, yellow, red. And it was for total clear or partly cloudy conditions. And it was high, medium, and low chances of.
Interesting.
It was interesting because it takes you a minute to be like, okay, what am I looking for? You know, because the green on the high chance of partly cloudy is good, even though it's partly cloudy, right? Or high chance of totally clear. And so that, I don't know how frequently it updated. It felt like it updated every hour. And it would change a lot.
Yeah, the Tulsa office had a graphic that I really liked, and they updated it a few times a day and more often when it got closer. And it showed the most likely, or no, it showed the most probable best case scenario, most probable worst case scenario, and most probable scenario.
Oh, interesting. See, this is interesting. These are, you know, the two Weather Service offices in Oklahoma have totally different graphics going
and
on.
And the graphic, it was kind of frustrating because the most probable scenario is the one that, you know, obviously you look at a lot. But the best case scenario was pretty much always showing mostly clear. And the worst case scenario was pretty much always showing overcast.
That's awesome.
And it's like, this is just one of those things that shows why ensemble models are so infuriating sometimes.
Oh, that is so... Also, like we talked about a little bit before the show too, like cloud forecasting, that's hard. It's really hard. There are things that you figure a day out should be easy to do, and it's not.
Yeah.
Like temperature, maybe. Chance of storms, maybe. But just the presence, absence, and percentage of clouds, very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, getting how much, and at a specific time, even. So, okay, on mass in the day, I might be able to say it's going to be mostly clear and be right. But here, we care about a 4 or 5 minute window.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So it was a very difficult, tricky thing to do.
Mm-hmm. I was always surprised when I moved from here, or when we lived in Iowa and we moved to Denver, about mountain weather forecasting and how difficult that is. And you would get ranges of temperatures. Instead of like, oh, it's going to be 78 tomorrow, it would say like, it's going to be 70 to 82 tomorrow.
Right.
And it's like, what?
Well, depends on where you are in this very local area.
Exactly. I was like, this is ridiculous. Like, those are very different clothes. So
yeah,
it was an interesting thing to take in. And I think students are always surprised too when you talk about, obviously we talk about this when we talk about climate, when you talk about the resolution of climate models, you know, and then I talk about too the resolution of weather models, right? And you're like, here's this bin, it represents 50 square kilometers.
Yeah.
That's one data point. You get one point, which one are you going to use? You know? So.
Well, an even pretty high rate, you know, like in the 24-hour window models give you variables in one-hour bins in time.
Yeah.
And again, we care about 5 minutes. I don't care what it is, 10 minutes after totality. I care about that 5 minutes of totality. And it just doesn't, you don't have the resolution because we don't know.
Yeah, exactly. This isn't just an eclipse issue. I had one of my colleagues as a specific area in Colorado that they're in, and she said, is this fair to say there isn't a weather station that captures this area historically? And I look it up, you know, the weather station is actually just like 5 miles away from that location. I'm like, no, that's your weather station. And they were like, but you know, I'm in this canyon and this is out of the canyon. I'm like, yeah, but that's your weather station. Like, that's amazing that there's one 5 miles in there. I think it was frustrating and shocking that that's the kind of, you know, that's really good, right? Yeah. 5 miles away. That's really good. That's closer than any weather station to my house. So, you know, I mean, besides my own, obviously.
Obviously.
So, yeah, that was very interesting, and I can't imagine every weather service was probably getting hate mail. And so it dawned, it was raining in Dallas, and I thought, oh my gosh, like, I am going to be so upset about this. And it was very dark, like cloudy dark, for quite some time. And then it started, once the eclipse started, there were periods that would be a couple minutes long where you couldn't see the sun at all. And so it was pretty nerve-wracking. And then we all look, and it looks really dark to the west. And we're like, man, this is the worst. Just the worst. And it was completely clear for all of totality.
Nice.
Yeah, it was unreal, the timing of it. And it was just like you said, you don't care what happened 10 minutes after totality. And it was pretty clear the rest of the day until they got storms later that night. So it was just perfect. And it was about exactly what they had said a couple of days before in their forecast discussion. So good job.
Yeah, and I was a little nervous here. In the morning we were clear, but we were supposed to have clouds rolling in later that afternoon and storms that night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I was really nervous about, well, are we going to get down there and get weathered in, not only for the eclipse, but just for flying home? what's going to happen? But it stayed nice until well up into that night. And even that night, the weather didn't get that bad. We were supposed to have storms for multiple days and several inches of rain, and that just didn't happen.
Yeah, that, I don't think that really occurred in Dallas or here either, but that's a whole different beast probably.
But yeah, okay, so let's talk about totality then.
How cool was it? Where's everyone screaming where you were? It was great. So we had a like solar eclipse playlist, essentially. Not the one that was put out on NPR, but it was pretty awesome because during totality, they had this awesome, very like gothic, like chanting music going on, which was great. Like, I loved it so much. It was a real good like spin up, and everyone screamed and then everyone got quiet because it was unbelievably amazing. Like, there wasn't anything else to say about it. Like, it was not what I expected. It's totally correct. 99.9% is not the same as totality. You should go see totality. You could see Venus and Jupiter. You could see like protuberances on the sun in the corona. Unreal.
Yeah, like I was like, what's that little red spot? And then I saw in the photos later where you can see there, you know, these flares, these part of the
loops. Yeah, you could see the flares.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't say unreal enough because it really was. I didn't think that I would be able to like see it that well. It was also interesting, my friend pointed out, it seemed really black and white as opposed to, I guess, figured it would look like yellow or red or something, but it was very white. Yeah. So that was surprising as well.
Well, and I tried to take a couple of photos and then I was like, you know, people are out here with actual good cameras and setups for this. Like, I'm just going to enjoy it.
Yep, that is exactly what I did. I had a friend that tried to FaceTime me, which joke was on her. I don't have an Apple phone, so... She tried to Zoom me in the middle of the eclipse and it was already over, so that didn't happen. And yeah, I did the same thing. I was like, I'm not gonna bother, I'm just gonna pay attention. It was so neat.
But yeah, some people had fireworks.
Oh my gosh.
There was a lot of yelling. You know, everybody talks about the animals get confused. And yeah, that we definitely heard a difference in the animal sounds. The temperature drop was impressive.
That was impressive for sure. It was like 83 degrees beforehand. And I didn't check like exactly how much it went down, but it was significant because it was so, so spicy in Dallas beforehand. And then as soon as that happened, that was significant. Plus all the streetlights came on. That was kind of funny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was kind of surprised the Mesonet, I only saw like 5 degree drops on the Oklahoma Mesonet. No,
it really felt like more than that.
I was like, where we were, I would have said it was at least 10.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I guess yep, I can, well, I agree. The Russellville METARs, I think, are only hourly.
Mm.
There might be 1 minute data from somewhere.
There might be, yeah. I have to look at that. It was great having that telescope there because, you know, my daughter's about to be 7, you know, and I was like, you can take your glasses off. And she's like, what? And it's shocked by it and everything. But the countdown that was running, it wasn't constant, but, you know, it was like 15 seconds till end of totality.
Yeah.
So it was a great reminder, and none of us burned our retinas because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, it was really neat. It looked like sunset all around. Well, first it looked like a storm coming as the shadow approached. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, it was like a deep sunset twilight, but 360 degrees. And then the storm moved off to the northeast.
Oh, so cool. You know, I thought about bringing my three-axis little travel magnetometer with me.
Yeah, I was kind of mad that I didn't bring any like temperature, pressure, humidity station. I was like, I sat here for 6 hours waiting on this. Like, I could have coded up a little longer real quick.
Could have done something. So, one of our mutual friends that is a professor at the University of Tulsa had asked me about it, and he said he had been, he'd been reading a bunch of papers about, you know, the magnetic field during the eclipse. And he said, you know, how do you have anything that plugs into to do data logging? And I said, no, nothing post 1987 could handle this machine. So,
right.
So it was a pretty old girl. I just left her on the shelf. That would have been cool though. But next time.
Yeah, next time I'll do some kind of wacky setup. But also, again, I just kind of wanted to experience this and not have to tend to a bunch of stuff.
Right, exactly. I read an article, of course, because there's, as we said, articles about everything, about like what citizen science you can do at this time. And it was just like, you know what? I do science all the time. Like, I just want to sit here.
Yep.
And see it. But I mean, that didn't mean that we weren't getting asked scientific questions about it, right?
Yes, for sure. And I was stunned at the amount of correspondence that I got that asked, so are we going to have the big earthquake?
That is so weird to me. It was so weird that I had to look up other like eclipse misconceptions because I had never thought that. Where does that come from? Why would that, like, the alignment of the gravity or something? What is prompting this?
Yeah, so that's the thought, is that gravitational tide's really strong during an eclipse because we have our favorite word, a syzygy.
Ooh, of syzygy.
And, you know, the moon and the sun are in a perfect line with where you are on the Earth, so you're getting this maximum tidal pull. Mm-hmm. The short answer is no. The but slightly the longer answer is...
Maybe, right?
Yeah, like in as much as storms cause changes in stress. So sure, there have been some studies that show that in very shallow faults, there is a very slight tendency for gravitational tide to affect timing of earthquakes, but it was less than 1 in 10,000 events.
Oh,
and it was never observed on like deep, large faults.
Oh.
It was just all these little, like the Wilsetta by you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there is a little bit of evidence behind that, but it's really pretty sketchy. And also, just because they're perfectly lined up now, there's near misses all the time.
Right.
The lunar orbit's inclined by about 5 degrees. So it's very hard, actually, to get the moon to perfectly cover the sun. But there's close calls all the time, so it doesn't really make sense that the eclipse would be so much different than the rest.
Right, because the actual percentage is not that much more.
Exactly.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. But you're saying there's a chance.
I mean, as a scientist, I have to never say never, right?
That's exactly right. So one that I thought about, that I got asked about, which I felt a little bit silly because immediately I thought, oh, maybe this is the thing, is are there eclipses at the poles?
Right.
And I was like, wait a minute. And I was like, yeah, of course. Then I said, wait, is that right?
Well,
and I thought, you know, you got to stop and think about it for a minute. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But obviously, because Yeah. The poles are inclined. It's no big deal. Yes, there are eclipses at the poles. But I was sort of taken aback by that one.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There were a lot of just, I don't want to say wacko, but.
But yeah.
But wacko things about, like, you can't eat food prepared during the eclipse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or if your birthday's during an eclipse, it's bad luck for life, or all these kind of crazy things.
Yeah, the food during eclipse. Every child at the party we were at would have gone down, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and the so explanation that was so wild of, like, the solar rays will harm your food. It's like, well, there's a lot more solar rays 30 seconds ago.
Exactly. So that's what the radiation ones, I always thought was, those were some that were very interesting too. Because I'm like, it's in the way. Like, this, the moon is blocking it now. Now's the time for this. Yeah, it was, those were pretty interesting as well. And then it's kind of disturbing when you read these ones about, oh, think of all the things that are, like, going through your body at any time anyway, neutrinos and such, and then it gets a little scary.
Right.
I definitely made the comment during it, okay, are the aliens here yet?
Yeah.
Because it really was kind of otherworldly. Like, I just finished the first chapter, or the first episode, or first, not episode, season of our favorite science fiction book, right? The Three Body Problem on Netflix, which talks all about syzygy and everything. So this was a very poignant timing. And I really thought that the aliens might come. They're not called the Trisolarians in the movie. They're called the Santi.
Oh, I haven't watched it yet, so.
It's so good.
But I was.
So I was hoping that was going to happen, but it didn't.
Yeah. But no, I was just really impressed by it, and that there was some good science that was getting thrown around. But my, mm-hmm. my wife made mm-hmm. the excellent point of, can you imagine this happening when you have no idea that it's going to happen?
Yes.
Or what's happening?
Or, like, what's happening? We talked all about that all day leading up to the eclipse.
Like, no wonder.
Like, how long ago?
Scared the crap out of people.
Exactly. Like, how long ago was this scary? Like, not very long ago is the answer to that. Right.
Especially, like, in context of our time scales.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. There are so many interesting Native stories about this. I kind of wish that I had been teaching Native science this semester, just because it's a very interesting part of it. And, you know, around here, there's a significant Native population. And so one of the things that went on in a lot of the schools was permission slips, essentially, to not view the eclipse because of beliefs associated with it. Because, you know, I've talked about the Dene a bunch, and about how there's Mother Earth and Father Sky, right? And so this is a really big deal where Father Sky goes away. And so it's a thing that you don't view. It's not something to be celebrated.
Right.
So it's very interesting how different those thoughts are. And yeah, can you imagine just going about your day 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, and have this happen?
Yeah, like... Mm-hmm. It'd be silent, but for a different reason.
Yes,
everybody
exactly.
thinks it's the end.
That's exactly right. I mean, if there had been an earthquake while I was watching it, I also would have thought it was the end. So there we go.
I had mentioned to Lindy, I said, I really hope that there is not some, like, New Madrid event.
Oh my gosh, can
because
you imagine?
Though scientifically, we would probably pretty easily be able to say these were not, you know, correlation is not causation. We would never get the general public to buy that.
Never. And I don't think you'd get most scientists to believe it either. Not deep down in their cockles. No way. Yeah, it was... It was interesting. The misconceptions were really interesting. But, you know, some of these are probably really rooted in a lot of these Native stories about eclipses in general. which, you know, yeah, part of our human experience, I guess.
Yeah. But no, I think that's really all I have to say on it, because
yep, exactly.
You can't really describe.
Yeah, you cannot.
Too much else about it.
You really just have to you really have to go see it. I mean, it's something that I knew would be different, but it wasn't real till I sat there and held it. Much like, you know, you know that ice is a mineral, but comes in a lot of different other flavors that you just maybe don't believe till you see them.
And that stumbling transition brings us to everybody's favorite segment of the show, Fun Paper Friday.
Man, I thought about that for a long time. I had what I thought was some good ones, but here we are.
Yeah. So
that
this is a medium density amorphous ice by Rosufisen et al.
Thanks, Daryl.
Or Rosufinson, sorry.
Oh, there you go. I will say that I had no idea how many different types of ice there are.
So, I spent a good chunk of my undergrad, as you know, working on methane hydrate.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And other hydrates.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, I got relatively familiar with the fact that water can do a lot of weird things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yes, I did not realize that so many advances had been made. In fact, that for going hydrates, just plain old crystalline water, we now have 20 identified crystalline yes. phases and 2 amorphous families.
20 different phases. Unbelievable. This, just reading the introduction to this made me realize that, like, I just can't. You can't keep up with science. This is rough. Unreal. I will say, I think 30 of these papers about the 20 different phases are by Rosufinson, who's clearly really obsessed with ice, much more than we are.
Well, speak for yourself. So,
what I loved about this is that it started off with hexagonal pieces of ice, which I completely have bought a hexagonal ice cube tray already, and that was what drew me to this paper.
Yeah, so ice, IH, is the normal hexagonal crystalline rings that is ice you make at home.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, we know about low density amorphous ice, high density amorphous ice, expanded high density, and very high density amorphous ice.
I thought this was fake.
Right? So we just keep discovering more things in between, so we have to keep adding more adjectives.
Yeah, exactly. So you can't get away with that whole, you know, you can't, don't say very in scientific papers, right? Like, it's not quantitative enough, but here you go. VHDA is a thing.
Right. And mm-hmm. what really stunned me, so I knew, okay, you got, you know, ICE 2 and ICE 9 and all this. Sure, I've known about those. But I didn't realize this very high density ice has a density exceeding that of water. It doesn't mm-hmm. float.
It doesn't float. How weird is that?
Very. Is the yeah. answer. And
yeah, exactly. So it's just putting it more weird stuff in the water column, right? Literally.
Well, and it's, you know, it's not a little heavier. It's 13%
it's
more
a lot.
Dense than water.
Mm-hmm.
And the low density ice is 0.94 grams per cc, which is very
so
light.
So still less. Still less, though.
Yeah. So, yes. Okay. We've got these things. I feel like the answer for any time you're talking about weird ice, when you ask why does it matter, is, well, it's, you know, planetary geology.
I know. So that's what I thought that they didn't talk a ton about, or maybe they did and I missed it when I was just looking at all the really awesome figures in here, is that you need to know all these different densities of ice, because density is one of those things that we remotely sense, right? And so you need to know you're not sensing something that you're misconstruing what you're sensing.
Yeah, I mean, in all geophysical models, like if you're looking at a gravity model, which is what we do a lot of in planetary geology, there's a trade-off between size, depth, and density. They all give you the same answer. It's a non-unique solution, as you love to remind me.
Always. Brought to you by batteries.
Brought to you by batteries, yeah.
So I really loved the really low-tech way that you can make medium density ice.
You put a bunch of ice inside a grinding jar submerged in liquid nitrogen with some steel ball bearings, and you shake it up.
You just shake it. That's it.
And
very interesting.
Ball bearings actually shear the ice along those hexagonal sheets and end up shearing its structure apart so that it becomes amorphous, which is like a glass.
Metamorphic ice. I thought it was very interesting too about the type of balls that you used changed how you made it, and that stainless steel wasn't the best. Teflon wasn't the best either. What was it? Was it tempered steel? There was something that was a different one that made it. So they mixed it with a whole bunch of different balls to see if you could get this amorphous ice. But there's a lot to be done with looking at. This is a very mineralogical paper. I know we make that joke, but it's all about looking at those crystalline structures with things like Raman spectra and figuring out those densities and the changes between these different types of ice, because Raman spectrometers are on all kinds of different spacecraft, like you just said earlier, right? So because planetary geology. And so this is kind of an elegant paper just looking at the crystallography of ice. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and they
get that. It's pretty cool.
They also did different numbers of cycles, so different numbers of shakes from 3 to 80, and showed that the more you shake it, the more you destroy the regular hexagonal structure and make more amorphous ice and have less hexagonal ice. Not surprising. But then they had a computer model that was, I don't want to say simple, because that undermines all the work that went into the model.
Right.
They had a comparatively or surprisingly simple model that was able, where they just introduced random shears into a crystal structure and then rearranged, that was able to reproduce the experimental results shockingly well for such a non-physical model.
Oh, gotta love it when that happens.
Right. Like, okay, it says, you know, after slightly different number of cycles, you have made most of your amorphous. But that's not too surprising to me, because there's nothing in there about how many balls and how much energy and all that. They're just introducing random dislocations.
Mm-hmm. Right. Dislocations being one of my favorite processes in mineral formation.
Yes, and I like it too, because it gives rise to electrical anomalies. But that's another show. Mm-hmm.
Ah, oh, that's a super cool show, actually. Smoky Quartz is my favorite, everybody. That's why it's smoky, all these weird dislocations in the crystal lattice. So just further proof, not only is ice a mineral, ice 1 through 20, and I don't know if this amorphous stuff counts as a mineral, right? Because now it's amorphous.
It's not, because it doesn't have a regular crystal structure, which is part of the definition of a mineral.
Exactly.
So in this case, ice wasn't a mineral.
Yeah. And I don't appreciate that, Daryl.
It wasn't even really that. There's a debate in here about, well, is it glass or is it just amorphous?
Right.
And the answer was, well, does it matter? It's amorphous.
Yeah.
Which it was very surprising for me to read.
I know. It's a very well-written paper. This is very interesting. It certainly has made me want to go back and look at some of these other, especially the very high density ice. And so We may be hearing from that paper soon.
Well, if you've got the 21st phase of solid water or Raman spectra of making your very own medium density ice at home in your Stanley tumbler, we'd love to see that. Shannon, how can they get a hold of us?
Don't panic, geocast@gmail.com. You can see us on X at Don't Panic Geo. I'm at Shannon Doolin. John is at Geo_Lehman. And as always, thank you to our Patreon supporters. You can support us too. Patreon.com/Don't Panic Geo.
And until next week, remember, don't panic.
It's not an exact science.
Any opinions, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed are solely ours and do not necessarily reflect the views of our employers or funding agencies.